All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
Do you know what the problem is with you kids today? You guys think that all science fiction started in 1977 with Star Wars.
We put the picture's name on everything.
Oh, look, he's got a billion toys.
Baseballs, the t-shirt.
What about movies like Forbidden Planet, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Solaris? What about Logan's Run?
Baseball's the lunchbox.
I have to possess this comic.
Baseball's the breakfast cereal.
I have a Mego Isis action figure.
Almighty Isis?
Baseball's the coloring book.
I say we stay here and fight it out.
Shut up, kid. You weren't even born when Star Wars came out.
You fuckers think that just because a guy reads comics he can't start some shit? I'll fucking take all you want.
This is Geek Stuff, episode 25. Yada yada party. It's your birthday. It's 25. It's.
Are you really that excited?
No.
No.
Feels pretty much like 24.
Yeah.
Feels like 23.
Right.
It feels like 22.
Right.
It felt a lot like 21.
Uh huh.
20 was different.
A little bit. You weren't here for that one.
Yeah.
I'll tell you how this is a little bit different than 24.
Okay.
Tonight we have Jim Lee.
It's voicemail.
No, that was last week.
Okay. If you say so, I'll believe in Jim Lee when I hear Jim Lee.
Well, one can hope. We're supposed to have Jim tonight.
I know.
There was a misunderstanding last week, and there was a swapping of dates, and we should be okay.
Is that right?
Apparently.
You know, they are starting to come out of the woodwork and be interested in doing the show.
I know. It's what I hear. It's what you're telling me.
But I don't want to tease anybody because, well,
right.
For obvious reasons.
Right.
But yeah, things I think are going to pick up, as they say.
I hope so.
Not that, you know, we need it or anything, because I think the show is just lovely the way it is.
I enjoy it. But, you know, it would be nice to have a couple people call in once in a while, say hello.
Take the pressure off you.
Yeah,
don't have to work so hard.
A little bit.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
We get real people doing voices rather than you impersonating them.
Impersonating voices?
Wow. I haven't done a lot of impersonations on the show. There's now, we have lots of people doing geek stuff IDs that we're running when we do shows. These are all real people.
They are.
We only ever did one spot using a fake voice, and it was we used the George Takei fake voice on the George Takei spot.
And you also created a voice for Tom from MySpace.
That's true.
That's a hypothetical impersonation.
Right. Based on the character that we've come to know and love as Tom.
Based on what we assume he would sound like.
Did you have something to say, Mr. Fantastic?
And now, here's Mr. Fantastic with It's News to Him.
It's right. More like your interpretation or imagination of Tom from MySpace. Like when they do the Lord of the Rings audiobook, Bilbo
right.
always sounds different. It's the actor's interpretation of Bilbo.
I'm Mr. Fantastic, and that's news to me.
Well, thank you for that, Mr. Fantastic.
Well, I'd love to know what Rachel Bilson's interpretation of Wonder Woman might be. Rachel Bilson is on the show The OC, and she is the latest rumor this week.
That
Although,
show's still on?
Apparently.
The show's still on.
I think so, yeah. I think it's in season four, I think.
Am I going to have to, like, create a fucking intro for your Wonder Woman news now?
No, it's just, look, every week it seems like there's somebody new associated with the role. It's constantly
changing.
Boy,
what would you do with yourself if they did a Transformers versus Wonder Woman movie?
I don't know. My head might explode.
Fall out.
No, I did hear that's in the works.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, did you?
Is it going to take place in the Old West?
On Cybertron.
Cybertron.
Nice. Yeah, there's nothing really else to say about that. It's a rumor. It's probably not.
And she's on the OC.
She is on the OC.
Do we know what anything else that that she's done? Fantastic.
She's in an upcoming movie with Zach Braff. I don't know the name.
Oh,
of
is
it.
That the Last Kiss movie,
yes,
that opened
that's
this
exactly
week?
What it's called.
Or the First Kiss or the Kiss or
mm-hmm.
some sort of kiss.
Yes.
Right. She plays the part of Kim in The Last Kiss.
The Last Kiss. That's it. It was Last Kiss. I thought it was
okay.
Last Kiss.
So now Rachel joins the list of
never-ending
super
list.
Actresses that have included thus far Cameron Diaz, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Kate Beckinsale, Charisma Carpenter, Priyanka Chopra, Catherine McPhee.
That's it.
I think that's it. So who cares? Is what
who's what else has she done there? Fantastic. Anything of note?
It's mostly limited to the OC. She's been on That 70s Show, it looks like, once, Mad TV. A couple episodes of, what is this, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Who was she on Buffy? Was she anybody in particular?
Colleen, looks like.
I don't know.
In an episode called The Dirty Girls in 2003.
I don't know.
So she just gets around, basically.
Yeah, nice. It also looks like Marvel is starting to talk up some of its future projects.
Oh, boy.
Looks like they might be doing a Namor movie. The Submariner, with director Jonathan Mostow, who did T3. So that's pretty much.
See, now I called them the Submariner when I was young, but obviously the
Submariner. You were wrong.
I was way wrong. My uncle, who had come here from Italy, read it as the Submariner. So that's where I got that.
But there's no extra E in there. It's clearly Mariner.
Well,
you're awful.
A pitcher who pitches in the submarine style is spelled the same way, and it's a submariner. A pitcher who pitches like that isn't a submariner.
Anyway, so Jonathan Mostow, who helmed Universal's T3.
Magneto.
Magneto. Yeah, exactly.
Except it's Magneto.
Right, but that makes no sense.
Hey, Stan Lee said Magneto.
What Stan Lee says goes.
Stan Lee said Submariner.
I'm a true believer.
Are you?
Nice.
I'm a true believer.
All right.
I can't wait for the feedback book. And in addition to that, they're starting to talk up the potential making of a live-action Avengers film.
Ugh.
Which kind of confuses me, because they've got a Hulk film out there already, and they're talking about doing another Hulk film. We know that an Iron Man film is in the works. Right? So to do a film like the Avengers, kind of...
Unless they use other characters.
Yeah, I guess. Use Hawkeye, Cap. Cap hasn't really been in anything
recently. The story would be Cap.
Yeah, definitely.
That would be the story to tell there.
Thor
would be how these perhaps modern day heroes could use the leadership and guidance of a Captain America.
I don't see how they could leave Iron Man out, though. I mean, for me, Iron Man is a quintessential part of the Avengers. He's the number two, if not number one in some story.
Reading Civil War?
For me, yeah.
Because if you're reading Civil War, you know damn well that everybody is going to start leaving him out of everything. They are really twisting that into Tony Stark just being a douche.
Well, Tony Stark's always kind of been a douche, but now they're really driving it home.
He's been a drunk.
Well, that too.
Only the douche thing
a
is
womanizer.
Only lately.
Yeah.
But if they do a movie, I mean, they always start at the beginning and rebuild there. I mean,
I have a feeling
Civil War Iron Man and make that the movie.
No, no. But what I think, then they would handle that in the Iron Man movie, I suspect.
The Civil War storyline?
No, no, no. What I'm saying is they'll handle Iron Man and his origin in the Iron Man movie as opposed to in the Avengers movie. I think they have to, if they are going to go forward that way. Unfortunately, they're going to have to go with characters that haven't really had film or TV treatment, which excludes the Hulk, which is going to exclude Iron Man by that point, which leaves what? Cap, which had a bad movie.
Yeah. Hawkeye.
Hawkeye.
Thor.
Wasp.
No. I don't think Thor.
No?
I don't think they go with Thor.
What about the Vision? He was in there, wasn't he?
Too hard to explain.
Could be.
How could you not
android.
Do Thor, though? You gotta do Thor.
I mean, I guess they could do Thor. Thor's, I guess, a possibility there, but
the last time Guardian.
Last time they put Thor on TV, it was pretty bad.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. We'll have to see what happens. But what I'm wondering is whether or not they'll tie anything that happens in the Iron Man movie and the Hulk movie, the new Hulk movie that comes out, into the Avengers film, or it will be a separate entity altogether.
I would say it has to be a separate entity. I just can't imagine them pooling that way without and using characters that they've already done.
Right.
I just can't imagine. It doesn't sound like Marvel. Don't get me wrong. That would be a smart... I think it would be a smart thing to include the Hulk in some manner or other.
Sure.
Even if the Hulk is the villain, you know, yeah. Not the villain per se, but
I know what
the
you
problem.
Mean, the problem.
I mean, it seems like a smart idea, but I just don't think Marvel does anything smart, so I don't see why this would be an exception.
Right.
Fantastic?
For me, the Ultimates has always been the movie Avengers in recent, in the last 5 years.
Yeah, and if they're going to make one, that's what they should make, but it's never. That's never going to happen.
They got the animated movies for that, but... I don't know. We'll have to see what happens.
They only animated that story instead of this kiddie crap that they put out.
Oh, Black Panther. Wasn't he somehow associated with the Avengers in some small way, shape, or form?
Ugh.
They've been saying they're going to do a Black Panther film for years, so maybe they'll just lump him in with the Avengers.
I think at one point it was... they're going to do Black Panther or Blade. And right. I think it was like...
Blade 1?
Wesley was like, I think I'll do Blade.
Right.
What?
So
that was a good one.
Oh, it was.
So Heath Ledger hates comic book movies. I'm not even lying. Well, this is a direct quote.
Really?
I actually hate comic book movies. Like, fucking hate them. They just bore me shitless, and they're just dumb. But I thought what Chris Nolan did with Batman was actually really good, really well directed, and Christian Bale was really great in it.
I think all those things are true as well.
Because, you know, like, I don't have enough problems and I'm not depressed enough that the guy who's going to play the Joker of all characters in the next Batman movie hates comic book movies, thinks they're fucking stupid, but he's going to be the Joker in the new movie.
Well, this is what he goes on to say after that. He says he's looking forward to playing the role, though. He says he's going to be a really sinister character. It's going to be... less about his laugh and his pranks and more about just him being a fucking sinister guy.
End quote.
End quote. So.
Right. So I'm prepared for it to suck.
Right. I don't know.
And him to suck.
I'm still trying.
Everything to suck.
I'm still trying to put faith in Christopher Nolan and Christian Bale to make it work somehow.
We did talk about a related topic to this couple episodes back, maybe even as early as 9 or so, in that some of the best interpretations of comic characters on screen have been by people who were unfamiliar with characters, not necessarily hated comics, as he says here, but needed to learn as they went. And they got feedback directly from the fans saying, you know, maybe this is what I want Wolverine to be like when they were visiting and doing the routes. And
oh, I love you half glass, half filled motherfuckers. I really do, but no.
Well, what I want to say is, you know, to me, that quote just seems very typical of Heath Ledger. Heath Ledger has always been kind of pompous outside of his films. I just as a person, he always comes off very pompous. He's always said, you know, I never really wanted to get into acting and I never really wanted to be an actor. But he goes on to make these... some blockbuster films so blockbuster films.
Right. He's the future Val Kilmer.
Yeah. He hates doing it, but a lot of his stuff turns out halfway decent. So, I don't know. Maybe he'll be good. Anyway, let's move into some toy stuff. DC has released some preliminary imagery and details on their Infinite Crisis Series 2 figures. The figures in the Infinite Crisis Series 2 are going to be Batman, Superman, Firestorm, Wonder Woman, Donna Troy, and Donna Troy as Wonder Girl.
Does it say which Superman?
It doesn't.
And this is Series 2?
It is Series 2.
Okay.
And all it really does is give a scale. All I have is a scale for them. There's, you know, 6.75 inches on Batman and Superman. Six and a half
so
on
they're the
Firestorm.
Usual,
yeah,
they're
it's,
the
a,
usual
it's a typical scale.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see if there's any pictures out there we can grab.
In fact,
they're probably looking at them right now.
Potentially. And they've also started soliciting 52 figures, Series 1. That line includes Animal Man, Supernova, Isis, nice, Batwoman, and Booster Gold.
Batwoman's gay.
Yeah, I know. It's the gay Batwoman.
Something happens to Booster Gold, too. I think Booster dies or something. They're really bringing Animal Man back pretty heavily, too.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
I don't know. You know what? To be honest with you, I've read like 2 issues of 52. So for the people that don't know, 52 is a weekly book from DC. It comes out every week for, 52 weeks.
Right. Isn't issue 20 out now, I think?
Something like that. I checked my bag.
Yeah, I think it's 20.
From today. And it covers the year in between the end of Infinite Crisis mm-hmm. and where the books are currently.
Okay.
So that whole year, obviously all these things happen in that year, and they're covering it with one book called 52 that comes out every week.
Right.
You know, even though the rest of the core books, the canon books, are all a year ahead.
Right.
Or what they're all called 1 year later.
Right.
They're in there 1 year
it's
later.
It's the filler
story arcs. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Those would be interesting. I mean, it's DC Direct, so you almost can't go wrong with DC Direct.
No, especially not with those characters, too. Booster Gold is one of those figures that I'm reasonably sure, I want to say reasonably sure that there's got to be a George Brewer quote out there somewhere saying that they would never make a Booster Gold figure. So I'm reasonably sure that that was on that probably never going to get made list. And that does give me hope that they are starting to expand into some of these other characters, mm-hmm. Like Booster, like Animal Man. Like Animal Man really hasn't been much of a DC presence lately, but yet he's getting a figure.
Right.
Gives me hope that characters like Blue Devil, or as I like to call him right now, Blue Hellboy.
Yeah.
Because that's essentially what he is.
Yeesh.
That they actually might do a Blue Devil figure or some of these other obscure characters.
Sure.
Or more obscure characters, I should say.
How do you feel about this? These figures, fantastic. Do you love them too much where you won't be able to buy any of them? Or maybe you'll be able to pick one or two out of a
line? Let's update that story. So fantastic. Have you been to any store and purchased your Gotham by Gaslight Batman action figure?
No.
Damn! And do you have an explanation that you can offer the audience?
Lazy.
Okay, that's better though. Okay. Lazy is better.
It's like there's cover. Hope. I don't believe it. I think he's covering up.
I'm just gonna have to buy him one. I'm gonna go crazy if I don't.
No, also have, you're not gonna buy him one. Don't be silly.
My head'll explode.
I also have busy and high gas prices.
But gas see, prices high gas prices down, so. Way down.
There, so you yeah, that's number one. That. Is gas prices have come way down. Number two, there is old Retailer X's New Jersey. Affiliate.
Well, I was going to say, what's he going to do? Hop in the the geek stuff
there's
jet
an
fly
affiliate.
Out to Wisconsin?
There's an affiliate close enough to Fantastic's house where he could run right up there. And I happen to know for a fact that that affiliate store, they have Gotham by Gaslight Batman.
Get out.
Swear to God.
Can we pause this?
So you can run up during the show and get it?
Nice.
All right. I'll play that bit. Go. Of course you won't.
Okay, so, Jesus. So our friends at Tonner have given us an inside scoop on...
Tonner what? What is it this month?
It's Tonner Character Figures is the name of the line. Tonner Inc. is the name of the company.
Got it.
They actually have a series of press releases that are coming out that have not quite hit yet. But I've been given the go-ahead to discuss these lines.
Really?
I have.
We have an inside scoop?
It's true.
Ooh. You heard it here first, folks.
Right. So if you've been listening to the show in the past, you've heard us talk about Tonner's Harry Potter line, which we are enamored with because of the quality, the scale, the likeness, everything about the figures.
Amazing.
And you also heard us discuss at one point in time that they've announced that they're going to be doing a DC line.
Right.
Okay. Now, some of these other lines I've known about for a little bit, but I haven't been able to say anything.
We haven't
yet,
been able to talk about them.
I'm pretty excited to finally be able to talk about these now. Let's hit Harry Potter first. Let's get it out of the way.
Smack in the face. Let's just hit him, little punk.
Bam. So, for fall of 2007, it looks like, they're looking to do Lord Voldemort, Draco Malfoy, which we did know about already, Cho Chang, which we didn't know about, and Professor Snape, which we did know about. So That's pretty exciting. Snape, of course, going to be the first adult figure in the line, although right. I guess Voldemort, kind of an adult, but not looking so human. Well,
it depends. Are they going to do like the young Voldemort? Tom?
The name of the line is whatever. Order of the Phoenix. So it's fifth movie. So it's got to be an older Voldemort.
Right. No face Voldemort.
Yeah, exactly. In addition, they're expanding upon the DC line a little bit more than what we knew about originally. Wonder Woman and Supergirl we knew about. Those are going to be the first two.
Right.
In addition, they're doing Superman, Lois Lane, Batman and Batgirl, the Joker.
Ooh. Now, these are all two-packs, right?
Actually, that I don't know.
Okay, because I thought at one point that he had said that they were going to be two packs, but I could be wrong about that.
That I'm not sure.
Is Harley Quinn listed?
Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy are listed.
Yay.
And those are in the 16-inch scale.
Right.
Okay. Next would be Chronicles of Narnia.
Skip?
Yeah. Well, actually, the only figure they talk about in there is Susan. So I don't know what else they have planned from the line, but I'm still excited about it.
Well, you liked Chronicles of Narnia, right?
I did. I thought it was pretty good, actually.
I didn't really like it.
And I'm looking forward to the next one.
So I'm kind of negative about the whole thing.
After that, they've got a Spider-Man 3 license. So now they're dipping into Marvel.
Interesting.
The first collection will include likenesses of Tobey Maguire, Kirsten Dunst, and Bryce Dallas Howard. So... Bryce Dallas Howard, for those of you who aren't familiar, is going to be playing Gwen Stacy in Spider-Man 3.
And is the daughter of superstar actor-director Ron Howard.
Correct. To be honest with you, I'm pretty confident in Toby. I'm interested to see what they do with Kirsten Dunst. She's just funny looking in general. So to get her likeness down in a figure... I don't know. But here's the one that I'm really excited about on a personal level.
Oh, stand by.
They got a Pirates of the Caribbean license from Disney.
Really?
Yes. The first line is going to include Johnny Depp, obviously, Orlando Bloom, obviously, and Keira Knightley, obviously. Again, these are going to be in the 16-inch scale. I'm ecstatic.
I'm calling them tomorrow.
I'm ecstatic. I really, really hope that those figures or those pieces come out as good as the rest of everything else I say.
I got to say that, I mean, based on what we've seen so far, I can't imagine them being any less than spectacular.
I'm not concerned, but because I have such a personal desire for them to be good,
right.
I really, really hope above and beyond that they're excellent.
Okay.
Again, I'm concerned with the Keira Knightley figure because the Keira Knightley figures that are out there right now, with the exception of one, they're a little sketchy in the face.
I still need that one.
A little sketchy. The one that you really want is not Aya. You're looking for Pirate Elizabeth Swann.
I need
correct?
The other one, too.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah.
Oh, I could probably get that for you.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I really need that one. I'm adding that to my Hot Chicks that I like collection.
Nice.
Sweet.
Sweet.
I have one bit of comic news before we wrap up the segment.
Okay.
It appears that in the wake of the awful Marvel Civil War.
Right.
We'll be getting a new book.
Okay.
And by a new book, I mean probably 100.
Right.
But for now, we're only going to talk about Omega Flight.
Ooh.
Omega Flight, as you may recall, was kind of a B team to Alpha Flight in the Marvel Universe.
Right.
I don't think they're B anymore because they are... intending to give this book the big push after Civil War.
Ooh, okay.
With all the with all the things going on with the USA and borderlines and everything else, this Canadian-based team and Canadian-based book is going to have a lot to say about the politics of all those types of situations.
Oh, all right.
So there'll be a lot of that going on. As to who makes up Omega Flight, they're being very mysterious.
Of course.
There is a Vindicator, or if you like, Guardian.
Right.
Character in the picture. But who is it? We don't,
yeah, know,
we don't know.
Because
that guy's supposed to be dead.
Right.
Not dead. And then it was his wife, but then she's dead or she's not dead. I don't remember. I don't even know where they left off. There's also very clearly laid out Beta Ray Bill. So he's in.
Wow.
Yeah. Beta That's Ray Bill for the unknown is a some sort of alien who was granted the powers of Thor.
Yeah.
By being able to defeat Thor and being honorable and all this other horse shit. Odin gave him powers, gave him his own hammer. He's kind of like the C-list joke Thor.
Right.
And with a big orange horse skull head, and he really is rather ridiculous.
Yeah, he looks like a horse wearing Thor's costume.
What really what that means, we don't know.
Right.
There is a very familiar-looking shield in the picture.
Okay.
And why Captain America would be in this book, I think, is kind of interesting.
Huh.
What does that mean, that he's in a Canadian book? That only, I can only hint at what that might mean for the end of Civil War.
Right.
There is some sort of Spider-Woman-looking character in there.
Of course, there always has to be one of those.
And of course, they're not really saying much. And then there's a some sort of magical, mystical sort of female character pictured as well. It's one
like
of these,
like a female Doctor Strange.
It kind of looks like that. It could be. There was a character in Alpha Flight named Shaman, right? And didn't he have some sort of daughter?
Maybe
his name something.
With sure a name, something.
And it's one of these. It's one of these pieces of promotional art where it's intended for you to have to guess at what's
speculating
who's in it,
right?
And it's unfortunately most of it is fairly obvious, which means it's probably not as obvious as it seems.
Uh huh.
So I guess we're gonna have to wait. Mike Oeming will be drawing. Mike Oeming will be writing.
Our buddy Mike.
Mm-hmm. With art by Scott Collins, who is somebody I am not familiar with. And I guess it's going to premiere sometime after Civil War.
Huh.
And I don't know. I think out of my respect for Alpha Flight, I perhaps should at the least give the first issue a read. I think if you're a fan of any or some of these characters or characters like them in the past,
right,
you might pick up the first issue and give it a peek. Of course, there's another famous Canadian superhero in the Marvel Universe. And Mike says that he will, at some point, drag Wolverine into the book.
Of course.
You know, if it's called for.
Right.
Which means it is. As soon as he's told to.
Right.
What
I think this means is, maybe you'll get to add a Beta Ray Bill sketch to your sketchbook.
What, by Mike Oeming?
No, by the artist on this book, sure.
I guess.
You don't have a Beta Ray Bill.
I don't have a Beta Ray Bill.
Come on.
I have the Frog of Thunder.
You do have the Frog of Thunder, which I'm kind of jealous about. Who did that sketch for you? Was it
Walt Simonson?
Was it Simonson?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know who I got this weekend?
No.
Yes, you do. You saw it. You were jealous.
Will you tell the listeners?
No, I won't tell the listeners. Now I'm going to punish the listeners because of your insincerity. But you got to
have friends. Hey, Kev, we finally got a MySpace page.
Ugh.
It's www.myspace.com/BigKev'sGeekStuff.
I can't believe we've sunk to this level.
So go there, join up, become one of our friends.
Ugh, yeah, one of our friends, like that awful Tom.
Hi, I'm Tom. I created MySpace.
Kev, how do you know what Tom sounds like?
I was just guessing he would sound like that.
We had say what? A whole lot of superstars on this stage here tonight. But I want y'all to know one thing. This is my house. And when I say whose house, y'all know what time it is. Whose house? I want to repeat my friend Matter. Trevor Van, they said rap was crap and river. Half this band to the floor came with a cooler name.
Hello?
Jim Lee.
Hey, Big Kev.
What's up?
Not much.
Welcome.
Oh, well, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to welcome you to Big Kev's Geek Stuff. There's a little bit of a lag,
okay,
but we'll get through it.
All right.
How are you?
Good, good. I was just about to say, I was thinking, toying with the idea of letting the answering machine pick up. But anyway, no, go ahead, go ahead.
No, that would have been funny.
Yeah,
especially considering, you know, last week and everything.
Yeah, I completely apologize about that.
We have 10,000 listeners who are expecting it or anything.
It's not like we named the episode the one with Jim Lee in it.
Oh, no, no. Ooh.
That's Matt, by the way.
Hey,
you'll
Jim.
Be hearing myself, Matt, and our producer, Mr. Fantastic.
Hey, Jim.
Okay. I think I heard from all these guys on my voicemail.
That's true, and as well as our contest winner.
Right, right. Yeah, that one was a killer. I must have been jet-lagged from a trip back from Italy. I just misread it. So anyway, I apologize profusely.
No, it's no problem. We actually it took all three of us and one of my neighbors, but we were able to get his wheelchair down the stairs. So, I mean, it's okay.
I hope he didn't. Oh, that's yeah. I hope he didn't have to travel far or anything. Like, I mean, that's horrible. That's awful. I really.
Yeah, it's all a lie, Jim. It's all a lie. It's actually one of our guys, Lucky.
Oh, and, screw him then.
Exactly.
Right. No. I feel bad anyway because he had to go from his Lackey room to the main, I don't know, room of phone calling.
Yes, that's it.
The studio.
I just like how you guys tag team the messages. Like maybe I was screening the calls, and I was like, "Oh, wait, that one's not Big Kev. I'll pick up for this one." Oh, it's
yeah. Oh, wait, no, maybe it's. Yes, that was funny, but let's move on to bigger and better things. For those of you that don't know, Jim Lee, probably the best artist working in the business right now, or at least the most recognizable name. Would you say that, Jim?
The latter sounds a lot better.
More recognizable?
No, I mean, you know, when you talk about art, it's subjective. I mean, there's a lot.
Very subjective.
A good job, but, I mean, there's certainly guys that are much more talented and underrated, whatever, or what have you. But, no, I mean, I've worked on a bunch of big books, so I can't take that away from me, I guess.
This is true, and nor would we try. And speaking of you being one of the greats out there, we found something from Atlas Comics called The Top 100 Artists of American Comic Books.
Really?
Have you heard of this?
No. Did that come out recently?
It did. It's actually online.
Oh, okay.
You can find it at acomics.com/best.htm.
Yeah, one of our listeners who happens to be serving in Iraq right now actually forwarded that link to us. He listens each week.
Within the framework of their list, they were judging based on technique, storytelling, accomplishments, and longevity.
Right.
Which
we
found.
No bathing suit, right.
Okay. No, it's too bad, too.
But John Cassidy has that one tied up.
He's a sexy man. No one would deny it. Nobody who knows him would deny it. Jim Lee, you were number 51 on this list.
All right.
You placed right below Alex Ross and right above John Romita Jr.
Wow.
So one can say you are in good company, I would say.
Great company.
But let's talk about Jim Lee because, you know, we could talk about the list all night or we could talk about you, and you have a lot of stuff going on, my friend.
I would be worried if I was number 100 because being, you know, your position on the list would be very, you know.
We could talk about how you just made it.
Exactly.
That's right. But, your next issue could be your last.
Right. So,
so
50 more, 50 better artists to come on the list, and I'm off of it. So I have a little time. I can. Anyway,
that's it.
But anyway.
You can slack through some other books.
Perfect. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Jim, of course, for some of you that don't know, we're going to act like most of the people don't know who you are, even though I doubt that's true. And for those of you that don't know, Jim Lee did some amazing things in the late 80s and early 90s with Marvel Comics, including a historic run on X-Men, where Jim's designs. What were you saying to me, Matt, about that?
Jim's X-Men really is the X-Men to a lot of people. A lot of people associate your artwork, Jim, with those characters. They don't know the previous stuff. You really define those characters for a lot of people.
Well, I think there's turnover in the readership, so, you know, for a lot of people, those are really old comics, which really makes me feel old. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely have fans come up saying, hey, this is the first this is the comic book that got me into comics, and, you know, they're, like, grown up with kids now and everything, but,
right.
You know, I mean, there's always a comic that gets a kid, a reader, into comics, and, considering our circulation numbers at the time, it just makes sense that a lot of people kind of got into comics through my run of X-Men.
And you really did, for a lot of people, define those characters. I mean, those characters, even though some of them had been around at that point for 20 years, your redefinition of them is kind of the one that sticks. And when they changed them after the point, it was kind of like, I kind of miss the Jim Lee interpretations of these characters.
Well, that's very kind, Kev. Those are my favorite characters. When I was a kid growing up, I loved X-Men. I loved not just the Neil Adams run, not just the John Byrne run, but the Dave Cochran, and not just the Dave Cochran run, but even, you know, the stuff from the god awful stuff from you know, issue probably about 20 to 50. I collected all that stuff and just love the concept of the characters. And if I had to pick one book in comics that I definitely had to draw in my career, that would have been it. So I definitely, you know, when I was working at Marvel, that was sort of my dream job. And when I got on it, it was sort of at a point in my career where I was just transitioning from fan to professional. So, you know, every stupid idea I ever had about these characters, the things I wanted to see these characters do, I tried to, like, squeeze them into the stories as much as possible. And I think, in some ways, I think that's why it kind of resonated with the fans, because a lot of the energy I was drawing from was directly, you know, very similar to what the fans wanted to see, because I was a fan myself.
And then, of course, at the end of that run there, you and Todd McFarlane and Eric Liefeld, and I think that's it, right? Just the three of you?
Eric Larson, Todd, or Rob Liefeld, Mark Silvestri, Jim Valentino, and I, with Wolf Protasio briefly at the beginning. But, so we started Image Comics. And
right. They broke away from Marvel and those projects and formed a whole new title, a whole new brand, Image Comics.
And, you know, who knows? If I hadn't worked on the X-Men at that point, well, A, I don't think I would have been as big of a name at the time, but I might not have jumped ship, because I still, that was sort of why I was at Marvel, what I wanted to do there. And it just was like fortuitous timing, because I had just done this very, well, not compared to like Jack Kirby, but a very lengthy run on those characters. And
right.
In that sense, I was kind of ready to move on. Like, I'd already done what I felt I wanted to do at Marvel. And so that, you know, we left and started Image, and, you know, it was really just a bunch of artists. Some of us had some business experience, but very little. And it was just, us jumping off a cliff together. I mean, and, you know, fortunately, we all took off. I mean, it was a crazy time in comics. There was a huge comics boom, and sales were doubling from, you know, month to month. And, you know, we were very fortunate to be in the right place at the right time with the right amount of fan following, I guess you call
right.
it. I think at the time, the best-selling independent comic was like 150,000 comics copies, and that was like Alien versus Predator from Dark Horse. And
right.
You know, Youngblood came out at, I think, initial orders by 800,000 or something crazy like that.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, we had no idea, but it was awesome. It was a great time.
At what point, Jim, did the individual sort of what would you call them, imprints, did they start right at the bat? Did you start Wildstorm right off the bat there?
I think initially, no one wanted to move. I mean, it wasn't a true company in the sense that we all worked in one office. I mean, everyone lived in different parts of California, and at the time, Todd lived up northwest.
In the mountains.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, thank God for telephones. If telephones hadn't been invented, who knows? No, it was common. And, you know, there was no internet back then either, so I don't even know how business got done. But basically, we would FedEx everything around, And there was like, we used Malibu as a central hub at the time, a very small publisher, and they basically coordinated like getting the books actually physically printed. Each of us started really in our homes, and as the business grew, some of us decided to start up studios. And I already had a small working studio with Wolf and Scott Williams.
Right.
But then when things kind of took off, I rented, you know, 2,000 square feet and then 5,000 square feet and eventually like 12,000 square feet and hired people to help run the business and different artists and editors and production people. So at the peak of it all, I think I had three different offices and about 125 employees or something like that. So
wow.
It got pretty crazy, at least for me. I mean, you know, for an artist, that's a lot of people to kind of deal with. And ultimately, that's one of the reasons why I think I downscaled or downsized, because it literally was, you walk in and you see people like, who are they? I mean,
right.
There were people hiring other people. It was out of control. Like,
so that goes on for a while. Image Comics and the imprints go on for a while. And then Marvel comes and says, we really, really, really want you to do some more stuff for us.
Right.
And that brought us the awful Heroes Reborn universe.
Right.
With no disrespect to you, the art was beautiful.
I'm still really proud of those books. I actually think, I mean, they ended up sort of relegating it to almost like a what-if type story. I mean,
right.
It was in continuity, but they never ran with it. I think they didn't expect sort of the reader reaction to the event or their own internal editorial reaction to books being farmed out and had never been done before, and they sort of got nervous and pulled the plug on the project. But, I thought it was very successful. I mean, yeah, it was a change of regime, you know, change of ownership, too, and a lot of these guys came from outside comics, and they saw how successful Marvel used to be, and so they contacted a bunch of Image partners, and Rob and I ended up working on the project, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, I mean, the reason I came back was just to work on the characters I didn't have a chance to work on, the Iron Man and the Fantastic Four.
Right.
And, I'm pretty pleased with the story we did. I felt that I have only seen snippets of the movie, the Fantastic Four movie, but I thought they drew some inspiration from the run I had on the title. And
you really don't want to tie yourself off to that movie like that?
You know what? Good or bad, you know, I'm glad they made the movie. You know, it's like...
Hey, Roger Corman made a movie, Jim.
Right. I hadn't seen that one either. I'm pretty sure that one was not inspired by anything I did. But
that was not inspired by anything.
The budget. Now, you know, here's the thing about superhero movies. I mean, it's a tangent here. But, I mean, a 10-year-old kid probably loved that movie, wouldn't you think?
Sure.
No? Yes? Okay.
Completely.
So if you're a 35-year-old, 42-year-old comic book fan that's been reading comics for their whole life, yeah, you're going to nitpick it apart, but I think, you know...
That's amazing, Jim. You got our ages perfectly. I'm
you know
30,
what? Did I nail it?
I'm 35.
I'm more
Matt's
impressed that
42.
I nailed my own age. I'm 42, so I'm impressed I nailed my own age. But, yeah, so it's like, I didn't mean... I'm the same way, so I really try to, like, look at these movies with an open mind and say, you know what? I hate it, but you know what? If I were 10, I would love it. So
that's true. That's a good way to think
of
it.
Yeah.
Totally. All right, so you come and do Heroes Reborn, and then it's back to Image, and then everybody goes plum loco.
Rob,
for
depending
example.
On who you believe, he quit or got fired, right?
Right.
So
then that happens.
Yeah.
There's strife.
I mean, you get some inner insight into why, like, bands that are successful break up. I mean, it's just a lot of it's proximity, and a lot of it is... everyone's successful and feels like they're invulnerable, you know, because they all have financial success or whatever. But, I mean, because of the way the company was set up, it really was a loose confederacy of all these different studios.
Right.
There wasn't that much to really physically or financially tie one another to each other. We were very independent, and I think that was always the mindset. That's what allowed us to leave Marvel, that kind of mindset. But ultimately it led to people leaving because they felt like, wait, this is not about Image, it's about me. And
right.
And for me, with Wildstorm, it just made sense to sell the company to DC and work with them. I mean, there was crazy stuff going on in
right.
the business side of comics at the time. There was a big bust after the boom in the 90s, and the business was changing. I mean, if you look at how comics are sold in the business comics and where the dollars are coming from, now. It's different from where it was in the 90s, and a lot of it is a shift into the trades, into these higher dollar books that are no longer periodicals, but evergreens. You basically print up a ton of them, and the amount of capital required to take all their books and put in trade format and you know, basically hold them in inventory and sell them slowly over time to recoup your money. I mean, it's a big investment and it's a big gamble, and
right.
I think that's not a gamble I was willing to take. I really, if the analogy would be, I'm at the poker table, and you know, it's like I've done well, I'm going to cash out, and you know, I still want to play the game, but I can't gamble the livelihood of all the people that work for me, my family, on what I think the business might be changing into. And so by partnering up with DC, I mean, we got this huge infrastructure that allowed us to do things we couldn't do before.
Right. That's an interesting analogy that you use, especially since I've played poker with you, and never once have I seen you use that consideration in an actual poker game.
No, you know what? I never gamble with money I'm willing to lose. But, you know, if you're talking about, you know, what you've worked 6 years, 7 years of your life to build up in terms of a company, and you're like, okay, I can, you know, things look very bleak right now. I could basically take everything I've made and saved over the 6, 7 years and put it, you know, basically double up all or nothing.
Right.
Maybe I could do that if I were 25 and single, but, you know, I married with kids and, you know, about 30 or 40 employees at the time. It's just like, you know what, I'm more interested in this company surviving than with the least amount of certainty,
right,
or
right.
with the most amount of certainty that it will succeed. So to me, that was a gamble, and it was either like you're going to do great or you're going to like lose everything. And going to DC meant like, you know what, we have a real good shot of doing well and a real good shot of growing, but on a very, but not in the same kind of way. I mean, when you have a startup, it's you're always worried about payroll. You're always worried about...
got to get these people paid.
Right, and where the company's going. It's a lot of stress, honestly, and I didn't draw very much, and I know it was a direct result of all these other things I was involved with. And now that I'm part of DC, I've been drawing a lot more, not recently. Right. But,
so you sell the company to DC.
Right, and they
and
basically
I hear
take
you
over.
Buy a small island.
Right.
And
right.
then you
well,
decide.
It's archipelago, actually. It's not
oh.
just.
Oh, it's
one,
several so. Islands. Oh.
Yeah. It's really.
I have to scratch that off on my fact sheet. So you sell to DC, and that, I guess, frees you up enough that you can actually, to the delight of us all, get back to drawing books.
Yeah. I mean, it took a couple years to kind of weather the transition. There was a lot of stuff that was sort of changing as things got moved over to New York, and we had to like tie our system into their system in terms of accounting and everything. But once that got done, I was able to sit down and I was reinvigorated. I wanted to get back into the trenches. I wanted to get back into telling stories. And, I mean, that's why I got into comics and,
right.
you know,
right.
and, you know, luckily I was able to do it. Honestly, I don't want to even think about what would happen if I started drawing Batman and I could never get it done. And that was the concern, I think. But once I got going,
and that's amazing that's what happens to you. You go to DC, you know, you sell your company to DC, you now become part of the DC family, and what you and DC decide is that you're going to do Batman. And so then you proceed to do what I consider a historic run on Batman.
Thanks. Yeah, you know what? It took a couple years because I think DC had to kind of warm up to the idea because they knew me from reputation as a guy that didn't draw a lot of books every year. And for me, I knew I could do it because I did it on X-Men, and there was a lot more characters on Batman. But, I mean, I think a big part of what got me going was getting to work with Jeff Loeb. I mean, he's a great writer, but he also wrote the series with me in mind, and he was also a great partner in the sense that he would call and just was really into what we were doing, and it was also a secret for a long time, and so you know, something to prove, and honestly, that was probably the biggest motivating factor in all of it. It was just like, you know what, people have kind of written me off, you know, I'll show them what I could do.
And you so followed that up with a historic run, if you'll pardon me using the same expression, on Superman.
Yeah, that one I had a chance to work with, I mean, since the the sale of the company, I've tried to really work with the writers I consider to be the best in the industry and guys whose work I've always admired. And so, you know, Jeff Loeb was a natural. Brian Azarel is another guy whose work I've always dug. And, you know, it was a little different working on Superman because he's such a blue-chip, mainstream-type character, and Brian writes edgier stuff. But I'm really happy with the 12-issue run we did, and as a complete volume, I think it's a nice more than a nice read. I think it's
definitely
an awesome, storyline that's very different. It's a little heavier, a little more somber than your typical Superman storyline, but I think it'll hold up over time. And that was a lot of fun. I mean, just, you know, if you're going to work at DC, you're not going to just draw the elongated man and the Atom. You know, you want to get in there and draw the classic, you know, big iconic characters. And so I was fortunate enough to get work on Batman and Superman and, you know, someday probably Wonder Woman, you know.
Well, the rumor I hear is that you really want to do Shadow Pack.
Shadow Pack?
Yeah.
You know what? I don't know who that is.
You don't even know that DC book, do you?
No.
It's the one with Blue Devil in it.
Oh, I know.
That's how, like, I know it, because it's the one with Blue Devil in it.
Yeah.
And I think Ragman also, I think, is part of
that. I know crew. Ragman, Cinder and Ash. There were a lot of DC books from the 70s, Amethyst, you know. No, DC has a lot of very quirky kind of characters, but it's a lot of fun to get. You know, it's when I was a fan, I really was into DC when I was really young, I'd say between like 8 and 12. And then when I hit my teens, I became more of a Marvel guy and really got into the X-Men. But it's a lot of fun going back and looking at you know, comics from the 40s and 50s and drawing inspiration from that and getting to work on a lot of the same stuff now.
Now, before we start asking you what comic books do you like and what's your inspiration, all the crap, we'll get to it. But before we get to that, what are you doing now? Now, I know that you're working on some kind of, what is it, Matt?
Well, you're working on Wildcats again, is that correct?
Right. What I'm actually doing now is blowing off every deadline I have and pissing off every editor I'm working with.
So it's back to normal.
Back to normal. I proved my point with Batman, Hush, and Superman. It's like, okay.
I can do it. I choose not to.
Right. You know, it's all cycles. It's all cycles. And, you know, I hit a rough patch there for a while. But right now I'm working on Wildcats with Grant Morrison. He's a super crazy, imaginative writer, and it's awesome working with him. And then also on Batman, and All-Star Batman and Robin with
Frank Miller.
Frank Miller, and, you know, who needs no introduction. And both those books are bi-monthly, so theoretically I'm doing a monthly book, but I'm switching back and forth. I've done a very poor job of it lately, but Wildcats will be coming out shortly, and then next issue of Batman will come out probably two or three weeks thereafter. So it's just, you know, when you get behind, it's really tough to catch up. You know what I'm saying? The most you could do maybe in a day is one, maybe two pages. So if something happens and you lose 4 or 5 days a week, you know, for business or sickness or travel or whatever, you're kind of screwed. It's really tough to make that back.
It's tough to do that and have a life is what you're saying.
And definitely I think towards the end of my Superman run, I was starting to feel kind of burnt out just because I was doing a lot of work. I was living in Italy, and then we moved back to the States, and I was still trying to, like, juggle deadlines. And we had lived in Italy for a year, and then, you know, I had to pack everything up and ship it all back. And that was a much bigger ordeal making that transition back than I had imagined. So, you know, once you get behind, it's very tough to catch up. That said, we're sort of padding the schedule on Wildcats and also Batman and Robin with skip months, and that hopefully will allow me to kind of get somewhat back into the groove. Lately, I've been doing really well, drawing a page a day, and that's really all you can hope for. You know, there's no end to this. You know, I plan on drawing for the rest of my life, and, you know, in the total scheme of things, you know, you're going to blow a deadline here or there. It's just, I know I'm still in the game. I want to continue to be in the game. So it'll all work itself out. It always has.
Jim, I've heard that you are involved in this DC massive multiplayer online role-playing game.
Right.
What exactly is your involvement with that? What's going on with that?
Oh, yeah, you know what? I forgot to factor that in. Yeah, that's actually been a lot of my time. Yeah.
Well, see, we do our research here, Jim.
Right. No,
we know everything.
Yeah, DC is DC and Warner Brothers Interactive has partnered with Sony Online Entertainment, and they're the guys that produced EverQuest, Star Wars Galaxies, and PlanetSide. And so we're doing an MMO. It's a massively multiplayer online game where people can, you know, buy the game, you pay a subscription every month, you create a superhero, you create a name, create a look, you enter the world of the DCU. You're going to be in Metropolis, Gotham. You're going to interact with DCU villains and heroes, and along with thousands of other players worldwide. And so this is like a huge project. It'll take probably 2 or 3 years to complete. We've done about 1 year into it, and working with a team of creators at Wildstorm, Ali Garza, Carlos Danda, J.J. Kirby, and Ryan Benjamin, and basically... you know, we're creating the look, the feel of the game, and yeah, it's so much work. I mean, it really is.
So that's a couple of years away yet.
Yeah, definitely. So, and that takes a lot of time out of the day, but, you know, I try to draw at night, in the afternoons when I can, and definitely on the weekends. There are weeks where you're getting like 3-4 hours of sleep if things get really bad. But, you know, I mean, luckily I'm doing everything I love to do. I mean, I'm a huge video game fan, especially MMOs. I play World of Warcraft with my kids. I was a huge Evercrack baby. You know, even before that, Ultima Online, which is another online game. So,
But Jim, you didn't play Star Wars Galaxies?
I did a little bit, but I ended up on a faraway planet, and I couldn't get off the planet, and apparently you had to get a job to make money to get off the planet. And I said, screw this. I'm not working 2 jobs.
Oh, that's okay. You could do it now.
Yeah, no, they changed it, so it's a much faster-paced
game. Awful, you know? Terrible game. You're right.
Right. It's not like Sims Star Wars Galaxy. It's now, you know, you jump in, and you're a character. You're interacting with the main Star Wars
Matt's motioning to me that I should not allow us to get into a conversation about exactly how awful Star Wars Galaxies has become. So
no. I heard it's I have not played the revision, but I heard that they've streamlined the game, so it's much more.
All right, Matt, I'm not going to do it. Okay. No, Jim, I've heard that too.
Casual gamer friendly, so, that's what I've heard.
There you go. That's a good way to put it. That's casual gamer good. Friendly.
Yes.
Right.
Or as I like to call it, dumbed down for kids. All right. So moving on. We were going to ask Jim all the awful normal questions, right? Okay. So let's get through those.
Okay.
Jim, what comic books are you reading now that you don't work on?
Wow. Is publishing considered working on? Like,
no.
X-Pac and I don't really work on it per se, but we publish it. It's a great comic. I love reading it.
Which one?
Ex Machina.
Oh, Ex Machina. Machina. Oh, okay, sure.
The Ultimates. You know, I read a lot of stuff in collected form. Next Wave, actually, is one I'm reading.
Oh, man, is that hysterical.
It's hilarious. And I love the fact that it's breezy and light, and it just takes these characters that have been around that no one really...
gives a crap about. You can say
Yeah, there you go. That's the polite way to say it. That should have been the tagline for the poster, the marketing campaign.
You know, nobody gives a crap, but they do.
Right. And Stuart Immonen's work is awesome. So it's been a real pleasure. Young Avengers I thought was really, really good.
Okay, Matt. Nope. I'm not going to say anything about Young Avengers. He's giving me the big no. Don't get in a conversation about Young Avengers.
Hey, these are comics I like.
That's right. That's why we're just going to allow you to keep saying them. What are some of the stuff that you read growing up or stuff that you read early on in your career? Because you came on, I mean, right in really one of the golden ages. I mean, really, in my opinion, some of the top 10 books of all time were written right around the time you started to get into the industry.
Right. I broke in the industry in 87.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's no coincidence that, you know, Dark Knight Returns came out in 86. I mean, I was 21 at the time. So, I mean, it hit me just at the point where I hopefully was showing improvement in my art at a time in my life where I could actually go out and get a job because I was in college. But that was huge. Obviously, Watchmen, the Shadow miniseries by Howard Chaykin.
Yeah.
I love that.
Excellent.
you know, then I started getting some of the indie stuff, like American Flag, which I thought was a brilliant comic. And, yeah, because before it was just, you know, the same old superhero stuff. And I collected that stuff through mail subscription. But I was in college, and I wasn't really following it. But Dark Knight really opened my eyes to the sort of potential and the possibilities of this medium. And that's what inspired me to get.
I mean, really, all of those, you know, and DC collects V for Vendetta, colors it and puts it out at that time. Watchmen comes out at that time. Right. I mean, these sort of, everybody points to Watchmen as the greatest comic book of all time. When did you know that you wanted to be a comic book artist? And was this a decision you were kind of like, I know I want to do something with my art, but do I want to go into comics? Wow, look at this Dark Knight book. Holy shit, I think I can do comic books.
I think that's what it was. I mean, yeah, my senior year in college, boom, 86, Dark Knight Returns comes out, Watchmen, and I would credit both those books as really giving me the motivation, the inspiration to sit down and really try to do a serious portfolio, a serious sample package, and that's what got me into comics. So that's what got me into the business of comics, and then thereafter, I think it was just like the work of guys like Barry Windsor Smith and Kevin Nolan, you know. And I'm talking mostly of artists. You know, I was always more art-driven, and it wasn't until, like, Dark Knight Returns and even X-Men, I guess with Chris Claremont, that I really started paying attention to the writers.
Okay. We don't want to mention any names or anything because, you know, as a professional in the industry, we know that you have to
I'll tell you who sucks and who doesn't. No.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, there you go.
Balls out, Jim. That's the way
yeah,
I go.
Yeah, exactly right.
How you feeling about Marvel right now?
Marvel's great. I mean, like I said, you know, they're producing books like Next Wave. You know, they've always done a lot of new and different kinds of things. I'm less involved in things like Civil War, like these big events, but I would say that same with the DC. I mean, it's just too much for me to take in. It's just too much continuity on both sides. And I generally go for the books that I can pick up and read.
Okay. Hold on, Matt. He's gesturing me that he doesn't want us to get sidetracked into a conversation about how there is absolutely no Marvel continuity. So I'm going to avoid that topic. I'm going to let you continue your answer.
Okay. You know what? If there is or isn't, I would never notice because I would say since 1990 maybe, I stopped caring about continuity. Oh, blasphemy.
That is kind of blasphemy, Jim.
No, because, you know, when you really think about it, if you think about Watchmen, you think about Dark Knight Returns, or even Frank's run on Daredevil, that stuff you can read and enjoy without knowing anything about the characters before those runs, you know, and I think that's something that's not necessarily missing in comics because people are doing it. I think there needs to be more of it. When there's a series built around a character changing his costume or something, or, you know, a storyline, it doesn't interest me because I'm not at an age where those kind of continuity changes make me excited. You know, it's like giving me a story where I read it and go, like, I want to know what happens to this character. I want to know how it ends. Like, you know, is he going to come through? Is he going to survive? Is he going to, you know?
I'm all for story arcs. I think I speak for both of us. We're all for story arcs. But, you know, something that for, 60 years has been in the periodical format, a serialized story, if you will.
Right.
It, while those side stories and story arcs and sort of, if we're using old school terms, like those independent graphic novel stories, a self-contained story, one issue or several issues set aside is one thing. But to throw continuity to the wind in the middle of a long-running book, to me, kind of takes away from it in some way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's one of those things like, with Spider-Man, I don't know if he's married or not, if he has a kid, or if people know
exactly
he's Peter Parker.
Well, they all know he's Peter Parker now.
Right. But given that they have different universes now, they have...
Exactly. And how many of them are there?
Right, but I don't necessarily see that as a negative thing, as long as I can pick it up in trade form, read it, and understand it.
Right.
But I can imagine if you've been collecting Spider-Man since the 60s, it is kind of a shock. But I've never been able to amass a collection of comics from issue one all the way to the present, including the X-Men. I think I have the most of the X-Men, but there's still issues I'm missing all throughout and stuff. So,
well, that's just lazy, Jim.
Yeah, it is lazy. Yeah, you know, and yeah, I could just have my assistant go out and buy. But who would have the time to go back and read? There's so many new comics coming out. It's like, it's impossible. But,
oh, no,
but,
totally.
Yeah,
I
understand what you're saying, but I think in some ways the continuity, I mean, how many people follow the continuity versus how many people, like, are we losing the chance to get new readers by having this continuity? I think that that's, like, the question that, you know,
it's a delicate balance.
Is the store, is the industry better off with a turnover of readership every 5 to 7 years of new young people, or is it better off with, you know, a diehard group that has been there since the 1960s? And
but here's what I say to that, Jim.
Okay.
I came on in the late 70s.
Right.
Late 70s, early 80s, and there was continuity.
Right.
And there was good continuity. And every Marvel book where it referenced another book or another event had that little line at the bottom of the panel that said, okay, go see this book to find out what he's talking about, and so on and so forth. Didn't drive me away. I'm still
here. I'd love that too. But I would argue that there were fewer books being published by Marvel at the time, and DC, you know, for their respective universes. Each of those titles were a lot cheaper, so it's a lot easier to follow the whole line. Today, comics are $2.50, $3.
Right.
I can't imagine collecting the whole Marvel line. I can't imagine collecting the whole DC line. But I can't imagine buying the whole Wildstorm line. So please, go out there, follow it with full continuity if you love continuity. We do have the affordable universe. That's our tagline.
Ooh, really? Is that what it is now? Wildstorm, the affordable universe?
Right.
Who's publishing
not
those
the
books?
Best artists, not the best writers and artists. We have the most affordable universe. You can put it into a little book.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I can't think of a better way to end.
I was going to say
Jim
that
Lee
might
saying his books are cheap.
No, there's fewer of them. You don't have to.
Right. That's what you meant.
Right.
Of course. Fantastic. Anything for Jim Lee?
Thank you. And for the fan that won that contest, you know, I'll give him a big hug next time I see him.
Actually, you know, actually,
how about a head sketch? A head sketch, that'll work better.
Actually,
Jim, a hug for me.
You know what he said? He said what he'd really like is that if you were to actually do this great, amazing Superman sketch in one of my sketchbooks, that would probably help him to feel much better about the situation.
Right. Okay.
So
that sounds great.
He said that's what he would enjoy in his remaining days, is knowing that had a Superman sketch done
right,
by you.
That you would carry books on his happiness and enjoyment.
And I would be able to tell his story.
Right.
I would reference the sketch, and I would say, look, and this is young Mikey's sketch. And he got it in my book so that I could continue to take it around and tell. You can even write for Mike right in there.
Okay.
And
that sounds great.
And I would be able to continue his legacy, as it were.
Right. Okay. That sounds fair.
Jim Lee's choking on his "I'm going along with the bit."
Right. Like,
yeah,
I'm Kev, so not doing this, gotcha.
That will never happen. Jim Lee, thank you so much for coming on Big Kev's Geek Stuff. We enjoyed having you, and we hope that you will come back in the future, talk to us about more projects that you have going on.
Yeah, it was my pleasure, and I'd love to come back.
All right, Jim, it's great talking to you. I'll talk to you real soon.
Okay.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks.
All right, thanks, guys. All right, bye.
Bye.
Hi, everyone. This is Mark.
No, stop it. Do it right.
This is Mr. Fantastic.
There you go.
Producer of Geek Stuff. Check out the home site at www.bigkevsgeekstuff.com, where you can download each episode, check out image galleries, and drop us your comments each and every week. That's bigkevsgeekstuff.com. I fucking hate you guys.
Hey, this is David Naughton from An American Werewolf in London, and you're listening to Big Kev's Geek Stuff.
And we're back with Geek Stuff, episode 25. Finally, good old Jim. It's a good interview.
Yeah, he's lovely.
He's a swell man.
And he really kind of downplays, I think, his role in the industry since he's been in it, which I think is a mistake.
Sure.
And he is, I think, arguably, he is the biggest name in the industry right now, artist-wise. Maybe that is my opinion. But as far as recognizable names goes, there's Jim Lee, pretty much, and then there's everyone else.
I would agree with you wholeheartedly.
And I think he's also underplaying the fact of his role in changing the industry, like when he pulled away and he and the others and started Image mm-hmm. and so on. I think he downplays that he was a part of large changes in the industry.
He was. He was a very important part of modern comics.
And I think going into the future, Jim says he's going to draw till he's dead.
Yeah, that was interesting.
So I think he's going to continue to be probably one of the names in the industry for years and years to come.
Yep, provided he can keep the schedule up.
Right.
And keep putting the books out mostly on time.
Right.
Mostly.
What else did we talk about?
We talked about Summer Roberts, you know, from the OC, Rachel Bilson, her real name, being the next potential Wonder Woman. I don't believe it.
I think we need to slug you a Wonder Woman news intro.
Yeah, no.
Do you notice, Fantastic, since the Transformers slug for his news intro for Transformers, that there has been mysteriously no Transformers news.
Hey, that's not my fault. I would happily report the Transformers news uh-huh. if there was. But there has been nothing, really. So, uh-huh. We also talked about Marvel announcing two potential movie projects, one being the Submariner, not the Submariner, and one being the Avengers.
He just dug on you, man. Sick burn, Matt.
Yeah. The Namor movie would be directed by Jonathan Mostow, who directed T3, which really, in my book, already puts a bad mark against it. So.
You know what? T3, not a bad movie.
I like that movie.
Yeah, I mean, it was not terrible.
Right. And Heath Ledger, and again, I quote, "I actually hate comic book movies, like fucking hate them." So that's good about the guy who's going to be playing the Joker.
Yeah,
that's a good quote to come out and
say. I guess there were no other gay cowboy movies available, so he had to lower himself to do a classic character like the Joker.
With a great director, Chris Nolan, and with a great
co-star,
Christian Bale. I mean, I really think that he should be counting his blessings
right.
to be bouncing back into a great community.
So I will say Heath Ledger, asshole.
Yes. Oh, he's pompous. We know that. We also talked briefly about DC Direct announcing the Infinite Crisis Wave 2, which would be Batman, Superman, Firestorm, Wonder Woman, Donna Troy, and Donna Troy as Wonder Girl. And also beginning the solicitation on 52 Series 1, which again was Animal Man, Supernova, Isis, Batwoman, and Booster Gold.
Which to me is a really... I mean, that 52 line, that's going to be really something because you're getting in there a lot of these kind of off-center characters that DC is kind of pushing to the forefront a little mm-hmm. in this 52 series weekly comic takes place in the year between the end of Infinite Crisis and the 1 year later which is where DC DC continuity books are now.
Right.
Fantastic.
What am I missing on Isis that you say it like that and give that crooked eye every time? What do I not know?
Do you
that
not
I know?
Listen, you listen to the opening of our own show?
Oh,
Almighty
right.
Isis? Like,
I have Amigo Isis action figure.
Well, yeah, I remember that part.
After today, it will have played 25 times at the very minimum.
And we probably mirrored it as it was playing 25 times.
Yeah,
all right,
we do all the time.
So thank
because
you.
Because we love that movie that. And we love that line.
Get on board the train.
Well, I don't know who that is, to be honest. I mean,
oh, good God. We really need to
we'll
take
save
you
that for
shopping.
Another show. We're trying to do the wrap up now, not the news to me with Mr. Fantastic.
No, we already had one of those this episode. Who's Isis? Well, all right. No. Here we go.
It didn't start in a log cabin.
Here we go. Mr. Fantastic, your assignment for episode 26 is to prepare a 2-minute report on exactly who ISIS is.
I accept that challenge.
That is fair. Discuss the character, her origins. Oop, I may have given too much away there. Her origins, Tranny? Her toy incarnations, and any other media things that she may have been involved in a 2-minute book report.
I accept.
Okay, fine.
All right.
Can you spell ISIS?
ISIS.
Good. He's already on his way.
We then talked about Tonner Inc.'s Tonner character figures licenses, which they have not actually released the press releases, but we were given the go-ahead to talk about these. It's our scoop. Tonner is the company that does the Harry Potter line. We've talked about them in the past, and there are some additions to that line that
went a little Australian there for a second.
Yeah, it happens. Yeah, it's Steve Irwin. I'm like summoning
Harry Potter.
You know, I miss him.
I miss him too.
Cho Chang and Voldemort are new to that lineup. Then they also added some figures to the DC Stars lineup, which would be Joker.
Batman, Superman, Lois Lane,
Batgirl, Harley Quinn, Poison Ivy. That would be that lineup.
Did they say Wonder Woman?
Yeah, Wonder Woman. Woman and Supergirl, the first two.
Gotcha.
Chronicles of Narnia, we know they got, although with the exception of one figure, we don't know what's in there. We know they got the license to do Spider-Man 3.
Oh, that's exciting.
Tobey Maguire, Kirsten Dunst, and Bryce Dallas Howard. And last but not least, the one that I'm most excited about, they got the license to do Pirates of the Caribbean. Johnny Depp, Orlando Bloom, and Keira Knightley.
We then had one little spot of comic book news. Mike Oeming's Omega Flight, kind of a spin-off-y, Alpha Flight-ish kind of Marvel Universe book, which we can only hope will do well, hold some sort of continuity, and be something interesting reading. Mike's a good writer, and I'm looking forward to at least giving the first issue a shot.
Sure.
Want to see where they're going with characters like Beta Ray Bill.
Excellent.
The mysterious Captain America-looking figure, who the Guardian / Vindicator is.
Right.
Who the Spider character woman is.
Right.
And who the mysterical.
Ooh, wow,
new word. I'm coining that one today. Mystical, magical, mysterical. Female character in the group is, and so at the very least that may be worth reading a couple of issues, and then that's all we did.
That's it
And then we had that discussion with Jim Lee, and that was it.
Right.
So, good episode. Yeah,
for
break
25.
My arm, patting myself on the back,
not to toot my own horn, but
you know, it's it's Fantastic's inspiration. It's his leadership, it's his charisma, it's his...
Fashion sense,
okay, good. Wasn't going the gay route, but if you want to out yourself, that's fine. And really, at 25, I think we have to thank Mr. Fantastic for all his hard work and dedication to this program. I'm not going to go so far as to applaud, but I will say...
Thank you.
That it means a great deal. Ooh, cookies. Is this for the... Oh, look at that. It's Angry Dan, and Angry Dan has brought us some chocolate chip cookies.
Mm.
Thank you, Angry Dan.
Not so angry tonight. See here what cookies do for you.
Here to celebrate. Oh, look, and there's Retailer X. Not eating the cookies. Well, fine, Retailer X. Slim down if you must. I guess that his community requires some sort of aesthetic other than the one he has.
Did somebody leave Mikey downstairs in his wheelchair? Maybe someone should bring him a cookie.
Mikey. He's lucky he's not here.
But I'm bummed. Can we end this episode?
With us chomping on cookies. Wait. Angry Dan, that is a damn good cookie.
And on that note, we cue the music.
I'm feeling nothing.